is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome, folks, to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol. Alongside me is my co-host, Andy Beham. And
hey, how we doing, Dave? But it's not just me.
It's not just you. We have Hayes Scriven on the line with us, who's back from his secret super assignment up in Two Harbors, and he's going to share some of his knowledge with us. How you doing, Hayes?
I'm wonderful, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, good. You know, it's warm. It's springtime. It's soon to be time to complain about the heat instead of the snow a week ago.
Yeah, there's not a cloud in the sky up here. I'm looking out at the harbor right now, and the harbor's wide open, so I would say Lake Superior is finally 100% open, and it's a beautiful day up here in the Northland.
Did you guys have to evacuate at work?
Well, my coworkers did, because I was down in a blind sitting next to Dave.
That's true.
But yes, we ended up having the center had to close because of the Husky power plant explosion last Thursday, and happy to report that Superior is recovering. The refinery is being cleaned up, and they're moving forward. And from what I can tell so far, and from what I've seen the reports, is nobody's been killed. There's just been a few injuries, and it's slowly making their way back.
Well, good. I'm glad everyone's okay, and glad you got to avoid the chaos. And yeah. I don't know. Is it more chaos sitting in a blind with Dave or dealing with a refinery explosion?
Well, I'd say the last
we're going to gang up on you,
Dave. Pretty chaotic, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Young Mr. Hayes was just like a sponge, soaking up all the wisdom and knowledge that was coming out.
Oh, my God.
Well,
yeah, I can't handle any more knowledge and information from Dave for a few days. So.
Well, speaking of wisdom, knowledge, and information, we do have some not from Dave. We were lucky enough to have Joel Nelson in studio a couple weeks ago, and he gave us some tips on turkey hunting along with a little background of wild turkeys. So hopefully Dave took some notes and was able to have some success in his hunts and your hunt. So why don't we go ahead and take a listen to our interview with Joel, and then we will be back to hear about the successes or lack thereof that Dave and Hayes had. So let's go ahead and take a listen.
We're talking with Joel Nelson, who is our pro outdoorsman that has done a great deal of work in the outdoor industry, including work for a number of major companies. Joel also writes for Outdoor News, does seminars on fishing and hunting, and has his own media site called Joel Nelson Outdoors. And we'll post out there the location of.
Yeah, we'll link all that. It'll be all set for you to go and educate yourself on turkey hunting.
Yeah, so Joel, we want to talk a little bit about techniques.
Yeah.
First, let's give a little basics for people. What's the difference between a wild turkey and a farm-raised turkey?
Well, wild birds aren't going to be the bright white with the dark red wattles like we see running around at the turkey farms. They're going to be a little bit smaller. The toms will be. Most of the wild turkeys, a good tom is anywhere in that 24-pound mark and up, whereas some of the farm-raised birds can be 50 pounds or more. They can be real brutes. You're just not going to see that in a wild turkey. They got to run up and down those hills, and they don't get a nice pen and a Club Med and food and water brought to them daily.
And we're not talking about the weight that you buy it frozen either. This is while it's alive.
Absolutely. Full of feathers and everything.
Now, there are a number of different species of wild turkeys in the U.S. What's the species that we have in Minnesota here?
Yeah, there's a number of subspecies. Ours is called an eastern turkey. Now, eastern turkeys are the most prolific in terms of range, in terms of numbers. Wisconsin, all the way east out through the Ohio River valleys, all the way out through the Appalachian Mountains, most of the deep south, all eastern turkeys. You get to the southern two-thirds of Florida, there's an Osceola. You get west of Minnesota into the Dakotas, out into the mountainous regions. You've got a different bird altogether, the Merriams, and then you go south of there into Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and you have a Rio Grande. Those are the four most common recognized subspecies. You've even got a kind of a funky one down in Arizona, and then another one down in South America, and we can keep admitting all kinds of birds into the subspecies group.
Now, do all of them know when it's hunting season and become a little more scarce, or is that just the Easterns?
You know, the Easterns are considered the brightest and baddest of the subspecies. They are the most heavily hunted just because their range is within areas that have been historically the most hunted.
Yep.
They are considered quite a bit smarter than a lot of their cousins. The Osceola gets a lot of pressure down south. There's not a large area to hunt them. That's only in the southern two-thirds of Florida again. So the Osceola can be a tough bird to get after, but our Easterns are pretty sharp birds, no doubt about it.
Well, and I know I just recently found out where I turkey hunt is literally right in your backyard, and I'm sure you can attest to there's times where they seem really thick except for that 1 week out of the year.
Yeah, you know, and during the turkey season, there's so many breeding dynamics and pecking order dynamics and food variables, and there's so much going on with crops being planted, new greens coming up in different places, that there's a ton of variability. So you add that with the fact that people are pursuing them, yeah, that's how you get the here today, gone tomorrow kind of deal going with the turkeys.
Well, folks, we're pre-recording this show because Hayes and I are going to be out turkey hunting, so we're going to utilize some of Joel's advice and techniques here. But Andy, I've got to share this one story. We had Joel on last year to talk about turkey hunting. And I remember one of the key things that you said, Joel, was about the planning. And you had a strong suggestion that have a backup plan, have a second place to go. And so last year, I thought I knew this perfect spot to turkey hunt. I set up, but I took your advice and had a blind set up as a backup just in case. Well, I went out there my opening morning. I sat there for an hour and a half, didn't hear a turkey, nothing. And again, I'm going back to Joel's advice. If you're not hearing turkeys, they're not answering you, they may not be there, have your plan B. So I hopped in my truck, went to plan B, walked out to where my other blind was, put my decoys up. I thought, okay, I've made enough noise here and stuff, I'm going to try and eat a sandwich. I literally, Joel, wasn't there not even 10 minutes. I never made a call. I had three toms walk right in front of me. And I was able to shoot a tom, get one. And something else I had never seen Joel before was the other two toms attacking the one that I shot. Oh. I mean, one of them literally stood on top and was pecking away at him. That was
super exciting.
Oh, yeah. That was you know, you'd talked about that, but I'd never seen that before.
Well, first things first, not everything I'll say will ever come to fruition like it did that time.
Oh, so. I'm counting. I literally sat there and I said, Joel Nelson is the best turkey hunter Midwest, forget the U.S.
Well, it's funny. The most obvious thing I've told people in the past is that the hardest place to kill a turkey is where they're not.
Yep.
And if your property doesn't have birds at the time that you're there, it could have been there last week or maybe the week after, but a plan B property is always something great to have. And, you know, you get to see the greatest show on earth. You got to see that pecking order and dominance displayed right after you took your bird. Yeah, a lot of times turkeys and competing males will come up and spur and kick and peck. And
that was amazing. I'd never seen anything
kicking
like
a
that.
Man while he's down.
Yeah.
You should have had Hayes with you. He might have gotten that one.
Yes.
That was a great way to double up. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, Joel, I want to compliment you because in years past, I probably would have hung out at that spot.
Sure.
First spot, because I thought, wow, there's turkeys will come around here. But just by having that plan B and moving and It's hilarious. I didn't even have to call. I didn't get to finish my sandwich.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
But, I mean, it was great advice. It really is.
Well, Joel, as, you know, other turkey hunters will know, you can't make the perfect plan. It's
right.
Every hunt's different.
Yep.
You know, they're responding.
I'm taking him for his word. I've got this recording I'm bringing out with me.
Every turkeys are responding to different things every day, but to people who are thinking about getting into turkey hunting, I would suggest find someone who does it and, pull a license, go with them.
Yes.
But let's talk about the difficulties of turkey hunting. Is it their eyesight? Is it their hearing? Is it their, it's all of it.
Oh yeah, they are incredibly well equipped animals. They have eyesight that's about 10x better than what we can see. They have binocular-like vision. They have eyes on the sides of their heads, so they can see almost 360 degrees. And if you'll notice, the turkey almost never stops moving its head from side to side. So literally, they can scan with better eyesight than we have at further distance in full color and in almost 360 degrees. That right there is formidable.
Yeah.
Of a challenge to try and go up against. But their hearing is also better than ours as well. Not only is it better in terms of what they can hear and how far away, but they can geolocate far better than we can. They can hear when you call. If you're calling with regularity from the same spot in the same direction, they can pin you down very quickly. And, well, that can be a problem for you. If they know exactly where you are, well, they'll expect you to come to them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a different game. They're very well equipped animals to go after.
Let's talk a little bit about techniques, specifically calling.
Yeah.
Do people overcall?
You know, it's funny. I used to think that the best way to call would be to call as sparingly as possible, only what the bird needed to hear to be interested. If a bird is coming your direction, as a general rule, never do anything to screw that up.
Okay.
If they keep coming, let them come. Don't try to cut them off or get fancy with it.
So once they come out in the open,
yep,
and they see your decoys, do you suggest little or no calling?
You know, with decoys, this can be a different scenario. Sometimes you'll see them react to the decoys. I'm always looking for that double wing flip. They'll tuck one wing back, and then seconds later, they'll tuck the other one. When they do the double wing flip, they're on their way somewhere. They're headed some direction.
Okay.
If they're headed towards you, don't make a sound. If they're headed away, that's a very negative response, obviously. So then I might be trying to do some calling to turn them around. But I'll say this. I hunted with Grand National calling champion Billy Yargis. He's won the Nationals down in NWTF convention in Tennessee for years and years. I hunted with him here a couple of years ago, and I've never heard anybody call so incessantly in my life.
Oh, really?
To the point where I thought he was over-calling horribly. But you know what the turkeys thought? They ate it up. Birds around us were chirping nonstop. We had several groups of gobblers called in. He called a coyote right off the end of my boot. Literally, coyote is coming at me, and he sees me moving. I'm taking camera shots with him. He sees me moving. But he's trusting his ears and what Billy Yargis is throwing at him more than his eyes, as this thing is no further than 20 feet away from my boots. So if you're good at calling and you practice and you do it the way you should do it, you listen to hens, you mimic live hen talk, you can call about as much as you want.
Now, if you call like maybe myself or some other people, you may want to throw them just enough that they question if maybe you're out there as a turkey.
Well, yeah, you know, the more proficient and confident you are at calling, the more you can get away with. But I still stick to that mantra of if a bird is coming your direction, do your best not to get in the way of that.
Yeah.
And how often or when should I use the gobbler call?
You know, so gobbler
should call, I use it?
Yeah, you know, gobbler calls are interesting. I think they work better out west. I've hunted in Kansas, Oklahoma, parts of Nebraska where you can really challenge a tom's dominance. From a long distance away, it's a loud call, so it really cuts wind, and you can call in groups of bachelor toms from a long distance. Here in the Midwest and some of the private land ownership areas we have, I don't ever want anybody hunting me. So it can be a consideration if you know you're butting up against a lot of property lines, a lot of people out hunting, maybe it's something you wouldn't want to pick up. And the other thing with the gobbler call, it challenges dominance. So there's plenty of beautiful looking 2 and 3 year old birds that might not want now to have anything to do with you. So well, a lot of times I abstain.
So let me ask you this. You tell me if I'm doing this wrong. I generally only use a gobbler call trying to get them out of the roost,
sure,
or to answer to see if there's
absolutely
if there's some birds out there.
Yep.
And then I quit. Kind of the early morning.
You're trying to get that bird to shock gobble. And shock gobbling is an interesting thing with turkeys. They will react to loud, shrill sounds of any type.
Like an owl.
Like an owl hoot, or like a crow call, like a woodpecker call. The ones I use is earliest. First, I use an owl call, and then as the day progresses, I use a crow call. And you're trying to get that bird to reveal his location. So then hopefully you can get within 100 yards or so, sneak in quietly, and sound like a hen that's just kind of slipped in on them. And if you can do that, the advantage is if you would just hen call at him, well, now he might be coming and you're moving and you're both moving and you might get caught with your pants down. So trying to elicit a shot gobble, getting close, and then calling to you is a really great way to do it.
So don't use that call a lot other than...
You know, you could use it on the roost because there's going to be toms gobbling all over the place. It's not really going to be a challenge of any way, sort, or form. It's going to be more something to get him to reveal his location in the tree. You can slip in close and maybe slap a tag on him.
Because I remember a few years back, I knew where there was another turkey hunter.
Yeah.
And he was using that all day long, just didn't quite understand. And so,
no, a lot of times there are companies out there that are trying to sell calls and, you know, catch hunters more than get turkeys. So,
And I'm one more to have a blind to sit in.
Yep.
I don't do a lot of stalking simply because I'm concerned about ending up on other people's property and stuff.
Yep.
But is stalking versus blind, is there pros and cons to each?
So it's interesting. A lot of the terminology you'll read out there, they say never to stalk a turkey. And part of the reason of that is to hunt safe. You want to hunt defensively. That said, running and gunning and stalking, in my opinion, are two different ways. I'm a big run and gun hunter.
Okay.
I love it. That's how I learned. When I first started, I hunted more passively in a blind. And I did that because... Well, that's what we were used to. We deer hunted. We deer hunt in the Midwest. We're used to taking up a stand, a position, scouting it and hoping birds will come through. But I really like the chess match of moving around. But here's the deal. If you don't have a lot of land to run on, you can run the birds right off the property because turkeys have great eyesight, great hearing. They can bust you. So I like to run and gun within reason. And when I don't have a lot of land to go on, then I'll often take up a refuge in a blind because the blinds are a great way to stay concealed, offer your calling to them, and slip in and out undetected.
So what are some of the main things I should have along with me when I'm turkey hunting?
You know,
besides my sandwich and my hot cocoa.
It's funny. I try to be a minimalist. I do my very best, although... you know, I was kind of taught to hunt by an old guru by the name of Guy Cunningham, and he's a true minimalist. He's got coveralls, a box call, and a mouth call, and that's all he carries along with his shotgun. A few shells in his pocket, and we're out the door. I've got a turkey vest. I've got some locator calls. Definitely have gloves. I definitely have a face mask. They can see you. It's amazing, especially if you end up in a sunny location. They see that glint off your face, and they're gone. So I carry a little bit of camo, typically a water bottle. I've got a box call, a slate call or two, and some mouth calls, shotgun ammunition, and my gun, and a hat. And I don't try to do too much beyond that. When you get loaded down too heavily, sometimes I'll bring binoculars, sometimes I won't. If I'm hunting in open country, definitely binoculars. But you get too weighted down, no, you can't slip underneath pine trees and belly crawl where you need to be and cross fences easily if you need to cross fences. The more maneuverable you are, the easier it is to reposition on a bird.
Now, to have success in your hunt, how important is scouting, getting out there ahead of time, figuring everything out?
I've always said it, and it has come true all the years that I've put a ton of scouting in. If you got a 5-day season, the way it, you know, used to kind of go in Minnesota, if you could scout for 4, you'd only need to hunt 1 day. It's just the way it works. The more you put in on that front end, the better off you're going to be. But not all scouting is created equal. Freshest information is best. So the scouting that you do weeks ahead of time can mean very little to your actual hunt. It could be more just for your own personal edification than anything.
Now, are turkeys creatures of habit? If you scout a spot that they're roosting, does that mean that's where they're roosting the next day?
Yes and no.
Okay.
60% of the time, it works all the time, right? It's
one
of those deals where you can lock down a roost location, and they may not use it for a week. And then a week later, you'll see them use it 3 or 4 days in a row. They will use and utilize similar roost locations. The best roost locations are used constantly, but they might adjust them slightly based on wind. They're not going to sit up in a tree that's really exposed to the northwest when there's a big front rolling in, because northwest, you know, prevailing winds are going to be buffeting them up in those trees. A lot of times they'll take refuge in a big southeast deep draw or ravine. So wind, light, rain, and snow patterns, things like that, can affect where and how they're located.
All right.
Joel, I usually will put a stick 30 yards out in front of my blind. So I don't know exactly, because sometimes it's kind of hard to tell distances. Sometimes you get excited
absolutely.
With turkeys. What do you see as the range when you should take a shot, when you shouldn't take a shot?
You know, that's a great question. And to me, it's all about what your individual gun, choke, and load combination can handle. I've got a turkey gun that with years of practice, careful loads, and sometimes buying hand loads that I've bought from Missouri at $100 a box for 25 of them, with the choke that I have after extensive patterning, I know I can kill a bird cleanly and reliably at 55 yards every time.
Okay.
But most people don't take it that far. Yeah. Most people don't even pattern their shotguns. A lot of them use factory full chokes and maybe pheasant load that they had left over. In that situation, 30 yards is probably where you want to keep it. Nothing beyond, but you can extend that range, but you need to pattern your shotgun. Know where you're shooting, know how dense your pattern is, and I can offer a couple guidelines later if you're interested in what that should
be. I've patterned mine at 30 yards.
Yep.
Just and I'm shooting a 3.5-inch shell.
Oh, yeah.
On those. But talk a little bit, where should you be aiming on the turkey? And where... Well, do you wait till the turkey's not strutting or is strutting? Or
that's the other good, that's the other interesting part of patterning is it gives you a chance to shoot at a bird's full neck, kind of fully erect, all the way lengthened out. That's when you want to take a shot. You don't want to take a shot at them when they're strutting. They're mostly feathers at that point, and they're not really exposing the part of the bird that you have to hit. Now, the effective vital zone on a turkey is take a number two pencil and put a cherry tomato on top. That's its brain with its spinal column, and that's where your pellets have to hit. You need about 5 to 7 pellets in that number two pencil and cherry tomato to effectively kill a turkey.
I think I'll stay at 30 yards.
Yeah, right. That might scare you. But here's what I do. You take it 40 yards, take any gun and load combination, you take a pie plate, 10 inches, and you count pellets. You shoot at that circle, that 10-inch diameter circle, and you count pellets. Anything 75 to 100, you're good at 40 yards. 100 to 125 or 150, you're probably got a 50-yard turkey gun. Okay. But you need to be able to reliably repeat that. And not just at the range with a good bench, but in the woods where you're half twisted after your leg's been falling asleep for the past half hour and your arm's half cocked, completely unnatural. That's when you need to be able to make that
shot. And the adrenaline of having a Tom right out there in front of you.
Your heart's pounding. It sounds like, your heart's in your brain. It's just banging away.
And with spring turkey hunting, you could. It's only a bearded.
Yes, it's one bearded turkey, and some hens do have beards.
Yes, I haven't seen that, but I certainly have read about people getting a hen with a beard, and that is legal.
It is legal. It's about 4% of the population. Now, that's in some areas a lot more than that. In most areas, that or a lot less. It's pretty rare to see.
And a Jake is legal to take.
Absolutely. And that would be a first year male turkey. A Jake is absolutely legal.
Well, Joel, we are quickly running out of time, as seems to always happen. But now, what is your one piece of advice for Dave to use this year?
Yes.
I want to know if this works. We'll have you on next spring. And
right. So I'm going to offer a two-sided piece of advice. I'm going to say patience kills more birds than any other piece of advice. And patience, when it relies on you waiting a bird out, waiting a spot out, before you're ready to move, you want to be a run-and-gun kind of a hunter, you're considering your move, take an extra deep breath, look around, casually observe, give it another couple 5 minutes. It'll feel like an eternity. Sometimes that extra 5 minutes is exactly what that bird needed. He was hearing you the whole time, and he came in silent. A lot of times when I'm ready and I'm sick of this and I'm frustrated and I just want to get out of there and get back to the truck, I force myself another 5 minutes, and that extra 5 minutes has killed me a lot of turkeys over the years. Now, the flip side of that patience is, when a bird does come in and you're getting ready for the shot, big turkeys don't offer a lot of second chances. So when you get the chance, take your first best shot. A lot of people want that thing to strut into 20 yards and stick its neck out and hold perfectly still. That's rare.
Okay.
A lot of times I get a shot that's a little bit of brush. Remember your pellets. As long as you can make out the outline of the head and neck very well and you know it's a legal turkey, almost always your pellets can penetrate that brush. Make sure his head is erect. But if he gives you a look in the brush or gives you a look out to the side, don't wait for that thing to come right into your decoys every time. Sometimes you got to take the shot you're given. And patience, but then also knowing when is the right time to shoot, that's the two-sided piece of advice that I'd give to any turkey hunter out there. I think it'll pay dividends.
Andy, I got to follow up with one more question.
All right. Which you'll,
mud, rain.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to get turkeys to come to you with rain and or if they're going to walk on mud?
Birds love a light rain. A light, even all-day rain, they'll be in the fields. They're looking to pick crawlers. They're looking to pick bugs. They have no problem. They'd rather be there than getting drenched in the woods where things are dripping and dropping and falling on around them. If they're out in the open, at least visually, they can see what's going on. So a long all-day rain, light rain, no problem at all.
So hang on.
Hang on. Wait, wait. Okay. Heavy thunderstorms, the trick is this. You want to be there as soon as it stops. If you wait till it stops and you're at home and then you go out there, it's too late.
Too late.
Okay. So be out there at the close.
So watch that radar and sit out the last 5 minutes of that storm.
Absolutely. And be ready because they are just like us. As soon as it's nice out, they want to get out and play.
Yeah. Well, I'm counting on you, Joel. Last year, I didn't even have to work using your advice. So I'm going with some of this stuff this coming year.
I sure hope it works out again.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll be fun because Hayes and I will be out there.
All right. Well, we will keep everyone up to date and see if this advice gets you a turkey. Yeah. Or at least gets Hayes one.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks again, Joel. As always, it's great talking with you. And best of luck this turkey season.
Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Welcome back. We're going to go ahead and take a short break now and hear from our sponsor.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market, whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors. Let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Again, we are back and we are talking turkey. We're talking turkey with Andy and Hayes, and we certainly had some.
I'm talking with a bunch of turkeys right now.
There you go.
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, that was so much knowledge that Joel has to pass on, and the more I talk with him, the more I'm amazed at, you know, the information that he has. And
what I really get a kick out of is the information that he passes on as tips and strategies actually work. It's something I can use.
Well,
and I tell you, I am impressed with the man, and I really have learned some stuff from him, and I've used some of his strategies.
I know 2 years ago you credited him for your turkey.
Yes.
With his one last piece of advice. So his last pieces of advice today, were they? Why don't you guys tell me about your hunts, sure, and let's see if they worked.
Well, Hayes, I'll probably go first. Just so people understand, with the turkey season, you have a certain number of set days that you get drawn for in the lottery in A or B, or after that you can go buy your license. But your season is 7 days long, and that is it. And last year, some of the advice that Joel Nelson had passed on was talking about having a plan A or a plan B. And as you heard us talking about that in Joel's tips just a few minutes ago, that really worked out for me. And so this year, I was drawn for season A, which is the very first 7 days. And I was really concerned about that, because we had still a lot of snow out there.
You were out, and it was a blizzard first day.
Oh, Wednesday it was. I'm sitting out there, and it is just cold, and it is just snowing. But Joel had talked about the importance of doing some scouting, finding where the turkeys are. If they're not there, you're not going to get one. Well, one of the spots that selected, I knew there was turkeys there. And even on that Wednesday, I was seeing turkeys, even through the snowstorm. The other thing, Joel talked about being patient, having patience, waiting it out. That very first morning, I was out there, and it was probably, I'd only been out there an hour, and it was about 6:30, and I had two Jakes come up within 10 yards right behind me. Would have been a nice, easy shot. But
could have gone into the warmth.
Yeah, could have gone in the warmth. But I wanted a tom. I wanted a bigger turkey, and I passed on those. And that was hard watching those walk away. the next time was right around 8:30, 9 o'clock that same morning. I had another Jake come out right into my hen decoys. Again, would have been a pretty easy shot, but boy, I wanted to wait. I knew I had the full season, so I passed on that. And then you start second-guessing yourself out there. And as you know, Hayes, when we were out there later, it is more than just waiting for that right bird to come along. There's a lot of action going out in the woods. That's fun to watch, fun to enjoy. I was sitting there watching a fox out, probably about 150, 200 yards away, trying to catch a mouse. Now, that was hilarious. That went on for about 10, 15 minutes with the fox running around, jumping in the air and diving into the snow. You know, you see that on TV, but I'm not sure a lot of people actually see that in real life.
Yeah.
Watch something like that. And Hayes, when you and I were out there hunting together in your season, we certainly saw a lot of wildlife out there.
Oh, yeah. We saw deer. We saw fox. We saw raccoons. We saw an opossum.
Oh, yeah.
Run out or kind of like crawl out. It was weird.
Yeah.
We saw all sorts of wildlife. And that's part of what I just love about hunting. It's just getting out and being outdoors.
Yep.
You know, I know it sounds cliche, but one of the best things that I love about it in those 2 days when I didn't have anything coming in was just seeing that sunrise come up.
Oh, you know, it was gorgeous.
Well, and you see things that you're never going to see on just taking a hike through the woods. When you're out hunting, you're sitting still and allowing nature to come to you and seeing it in its natural environment, where you have those moments that you can just sit and watch forever.
Yep. So let's talk just a little strategy of what I did for my first season. One, I had a plan A and a plan B. Had two different areas set up. I know Joel has talked a lot about he likes the run and gun, but you need access to a lot of property to do that. I don't have that kind of access, so I'm hunting in a blind, and I actually kind of prefer hunting in a blind. So I selected a spot as my main spot where I know I'd seen turkeys around, set up my blind, so it was just inside the woods, but there was an old cornfield just right out in front. I've talked about this before. I love to put a marker 30 yards out so I know exactly where 30 yards is. Whether people want to admit it or not, a lot of people have problems telling true distances on stuff, especially in the twilight. And the reason I put that 30-yard stick out there is I like to set up my decoys within 25 to 27 yards of the blind. That way, if you have a tom coming in, if you have your decoys out 40 yards, it's not unusual for a tom to lock up another 20, 25 yards away, and all of a sudden you're looking at a 70, 80-yard shot, which is too long, in my opinion, for a shotgun. You put them too close to your blind, turkeys can start to hear you and see you. So I like that 25 to 27 yards, and that's easy to do when you got a marker out there. The other thing is I generally only use three decoys, sometimes four. In this case, I used four, but only one was a Jake, and I set those out. And the reason I used a fourth one, I had it closer back by the woods. And lastly, back to the marker, you can get excited when you see a tom coming into your decoys. Having that stick there to kind of help you tell distances for shooting is real valuable. And I waited it out. I didn't get my bird until Friday morning. So Wednesday and Thursday, I was out there, you know, a little after 5 o'clock, waiting for the sun to come up. And I hung out till 6 o'clock both those days. And I was doing a fair amount of calling. And I could see a lot of birds out in the field. They weren't responding to my call at all. And so you could just say, hey, Dave's a bad caller, which is probably fair. But sometimes they don't respond, and I wasn't hearing any hens talking at all. So I changed up my strategy. One other thing I noticed, watching the birds far away, the toms were fighting. There was a dominant tom chasing away other Jakes and stuff. So on Friday morning, I made the conscious decision that I was going to call very little or not at all, and I changed up my decoys and had my Jake as the most prominent bird out there. So along Friday morning, I used my shot gobbler just a little bit, and then I actually put it away and didn't use it after 6:15 and stopped calling altogether. And sure enough, around 8:30, I had a great big tom come out. He never strutted. He went right over to challenge my Jake. He saw that. He walked over, and he was only about 10 yards away from it, just giving it a stare down. Gave me a real, real easy shot, and one shot, and then I was done. So, and, again, following some of Joel's strategies about changing up techniques, changing up how things look, don't overcall. That really worked. It really did work.
And rumor has it you got a decent turkey.
This was the biggest turkey I've ever gotten. I would say this is, I was trying to count up. I think this was my 10th turkey that I've gotten, and this one was 27 pounds and a 10-inch plus beard. And so I was extremely happy that I waited and passed on those Jakes right early in the season.
Nice work. Well, I'm glad that you had your success, but now the part that I'm looking forward to is hearing about the adventures of Dave and Hayes together the blind. So why don't we let Hayes chime in here and talk about the real hunt?
Yes.
The real hunt, yeah, the grind that was my hunt. And it's funny, you know, with Dave's, for the last probably 3 years, Dave and I have been turkey hunting. Well, we've been hunting turkey probably 4 years together, actually.
Yeah.
And the first year I hunted with Dave was actually a really interesting year for me. It was only my second year ever hunting, and I learned a lot just, you know, sitting there and watching. And you know, he and I, the first year I got a Jake and he got a nice tom again, and then the next year I screwed up the hunt and missed my shot, and Dave didn't get a bird that year either, so that made me feel good. But then last year he and I both had the same season, and Dave was lucky enough to get up before me because I just changed my job, and David got a bird, and then I didn't get a chance to really hunt a lot last year. And this year we did purposely, I knew A season was going to be rough, so I purposely picked B, and then Dave said he'll take A, and that's why we ended up with two opposite seasons. But it actually worked out because I was going to come down and help Dave call on Friday, Saturday of his season, but he got his bird that day. And so I just came down, and he and I sat in the blind and listened. We wanted to see how the shot had affected the turkeys, and we heard them quite a bit, and actually but it wasn't as loud as David said they were the week before.
No,
right?
No, they weren't.
The one thing that was different with this one is we heard a lot more hens, though, and they were calling back to each other. And I left Saturday thinking, okay, cool, there's a lot of birds around. Great, we're in a new spot. We'll, you know, I'm going to have a good chance. Dave got a bird on Friday. I'll be done Wednesday. You know, I'll be good. And I get out there, and I'm by myself for a little bit on Wednesday morning, and I hear two gobbles, like, all morning, and it was just depressing. You know, I just, you know, after seeing the pictures of all these birds out there, and they weren't answering back the calls at all, and, you know, Dave came out in the afternoon, and we just kind of sat there, and we were, like, talking, and that's about all we did, because we didn't see anything at all. And it was such a change, you know, the weather pattern had changed. By the time I started hunting on Wednesday, all the snow was gone. And it was a banner day. There was not a cloud in the sky. It was beautiful out. And we thought that the birds would be out in the field scratching and looking. And nope, they weren't there.
I had actually sent Hayes a picture of about 25 turkeys out in that field.
Yeah.
You know, just a day before.
And Hayes is wondering if you just went online and pulled that just to get his hopes up.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I know Dave likes to torment me, so that's why it's always a problem for me. But so then, I figured, maybe they'll come back. And but I was really disappointed because I didn't hear them, and I thought maybe they'd moved off. And I'm like, crap, we got this new spot. Dave got his bird. Like, he's always lucky to get his bird, and I'm going to be stuck here grinding for 6 days on nothing. And the next day, we both come out, and I was a little bit more optimistic because I heard more birds this time. There was more gobbling, but they still were pretty far away.
Yeah, they were.
And the next thing that we heard, which was also really kind of depressing for us, is in about a matter of 20 minutes, we heard three shots. all one single shot in different areas. You know, they all came from all around us. So we knew there were other hunters out there. They had all got their birds because it was one single shot. And we're like, well, great.
Everyone's succeeding now, but me.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of them days again, I guess. And that was the day we kind of took a break. And I came in for lunch and came into Northfield and saw some friends. And then I went back out in the evening. I'd never actually hunted 5 o'clock for turkey yet. I'd never really done that. And I wanted to try since I had the time and I didn't have anything else to do. And I was sitting there, and about 7 o'clock, I hadn't heard a bird all day, and I looked behind me, and there was a tom walking right behind me, and I grabbed my gun quick to turn around, and we were up on a ridge, so he kind of went down the hill there, and I didn't follow him because I didn't want to spook him at all, but I started calling like crazy, and he didn't answer and didn't answer. I'm like, well, they're just not interested. He was going to roost, and maybe there'll be a bird there on Friday morning. And so I went back, and I was even more depressed because I just saw the one bird, but I was still optimistic that there was something was going to happen. And Friday morning, Dave and I went out in the morning. We got out there about 5:30 and crawled up to the blind, and about 5:45, they started gobbling. They were really early.
I also gave you a prediction.
You did. You said I would have my bird by, what, 8:30, 9 o'clock, something like that?
Yeah, so I was a little off.
Yeah, a little off. But you did say I would get a bird that day. But and that was after we heard them gobbling earlier,
yep.
Because all the time Dave had been out there the week before and the whole time I've been out there, they hadn't gobbled that early. And they were a lot closer this time. We could hear at least two gobblers closer to us. And so, and I decided after that point, I'm going to change up my plan, and I'm going to be more aggressive calling. So every time that they gobbled, I called, or Dave called, and we actually got them to respond this time. And so they were calling back to us, and then about 6:30, usually they were done. But no, they kept gobbling until about 7 o'clock. And then we didn't hear them for a while, and then just one of our – I was still keeping up with the idea of being more aggressive with my calls because I'm like, you know, something's different here. I want them known that we're up here, that there's hens up here, that they need to come up to the field because it's another beautiful day, and there's no reason for the birds not to be in the field. And so we started calling at about 8 o'clock again, and oh my gosh, they're responding. Like, there was a ton of gobbling between 8 and 8:30, and they were all responding to the calls, and they were – something had jacked them up. They were really excited that morning.
It was really interesting, Hayes, how it had changed from just a few days before – where yep. hens weren't talking and they weren't responding to calls to all of a sudden by